Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hello, friends. Today, we are joined by a human I deeply admire. I am so excited to have Adriana Lozana on the podcast with us today. Adriana is an advanced birth doula, an eco-maternity consultant, a postpartum educator, and a child sleep consultant. She's a best-selling author, speaker, and host of the acclaimed Birthful podcast, all part of her quest to help people have a smoother transition into parenthood. And I'm also honored to call her a friend. Welcome to the show!
Yay! Thank you for having me on. And yes, I am so honored to be here and definitely consider you a friend for sure.
Oh, well, thank you. And you've so helped me even, I mean, your podcast, massive congrats, 5 years, millions of downloads. I mean, you are doing incredible work. And when I was starting my show, you held my hand through so much. And I'm just so, so thankful for you. So why don't you introduce yourself a bit more to my community?
Sure. So I am originally from Venezuela. I was born there and I've lived a little bit all over the world. Spent some time in Japan, some time I did my undergraduate in Montreal, have spent some time in Europe and here in the US for the past 15 years. So, wow. Right? This is itchy feet stop. Well, they didn't stop. Movement stopped once I had my child, which is a whole different conversation. But I think that has been that background really provided me with a global perspective and be able to really live the fact that how you do things one place is not how you do something somewhere else. And they're both right, right? There's no right complete answer. There's no absolute truth. So I think that sort of pillar to my life has really informed and inspired all the work that I do, and I feel it reflects in how I doula, right? Really letting people be, I trust that they're experts in themselves and I treat them like that.
Adriana, why don't you define what a doula is? I know a lot of people do know, but not everyone does who listens. So I feel like we all define it, the work of a doula, a little different as well. So I'd love to hear your definition of a doula.
Yeah, absolutely. And usually when we say doula, we're getting better at it, but I do that myself, just as associate doula with birth doula. And so there are different types of doulas. There are birth doulas, postpartum doulas, fertility doulas, abortion doulas, social justice, like there's all kinds of doulas relating to the reproduction rights, reproductive rights. And so particularly I do work as a birth doula, and a birth doula is a person who provides, like the definition, the textbook definition is provides physical, emotional, and informational support to the birthing person and their partner, if they have one, from the onset of labor until 1 to 2 hours after baby is born. And that also includes a couple of prenatal meetings. People do things differently on how many they do and how long they are. And also a check-in postpartum meeting. And again, people do different things in terms of how many of those and when they happen. In my case, I tend to do 2 hour-and-a-half prenatals. The first one, as soon as we can have it, because I give people homework because I think so. There's so much work to be done during pregnancy to make your labor so much better that we have to put in the work up ahead. And then the second one's like 1 to 2 or 2 weeks before your due date. In case you go early, we still have it, but not so early but close enough that you have the information fresh in your mind. And then do the birth support. And finally, the postpartum is about 7 to 10 days after the baby is born. That's what I do. I've been doing this for 13 years and I feel that's what works for me.
Yeah.
But the key there is that continuous support during labor and birth, usually from the onset of labor. And that's important also because early labor, you might not need the support of a doula physically there. And I think I've come to realize after doing this for so long that continuous support doesn't necessarily mean physical continuous support. Like, I don't need to be by your side from the moment you have your first contraction, but we do check in and continue. And sometimes I go to a person's house. Oh, that's the other thing. Like, because we're hired by the birthing person, generally, the independent birth doulas. There are some hospital-based birth doulas. But in my case, independent birth doula, I go to wherever the birthing person is giving birth. So it can be just at their house if they're having a home birth order, or a birth center or a hospital birth, wherever. But that doesn't mean that if they're having a hospital birth, I do often join them at their house first, which whenever they need me, wherever they are.
Yeah, I mean, I am a huge champion of doulas, as you know, but as people have listened to this show a lot, I feel so thankful that I hired a doula, 5 months into my pregnancy. So it's never too late. It's never too soon. And that my doula really helped me to understand what my options were, and that because I wanted an unmedicated natural childbirth, that maybe I should consider the midwifery model of care and not just the obstetric, and educated me in so many ways. But doulas work with people whether they want a medicated birth, whether they are having a cesarean birth. And I think when a lot of people assume doulas, I feel like people, there's two things. They feel, oh, my doula will speak for me. And two, I only would need a doula if I want an unmedicated birth. And I think those things are so far from the truth. And anyone who is open to the idea of having a doula, someone there to help do all the things that we just talked about. I mean, that physical support, that educational piece was so important to me, but just having that continuity of care, and then they don't provide medical care, but I just mean like continuity of someone there who is professionally trained around birth to be there with you, because doctors come and go, nurses come and go, midwives come and go, depending upon where you are giving birth, and to have that one person with you can really help you to feel empowered throughout your whole birthing experience. It is incredible. So I really encourage people, if you are trying to conceive or pregnant and interested in learning more, to be open to the idea of it, and to have, some interviews, some local doulas, and see if this is a good fit for you, because I honestly feel that it helped to put my pregnancy on a completely different course in my birth, and helped me to have an outcome that led me to do what I do with my life now, and changed everything for me. And I just am so grateful for the work of doulas.
Yeah, and doulas, they help the whole family, right? Because I find that some of my biggest advocates, advocates for doulas, tend to be the partners, the husbands, because you're there for them just as much as the birthing person, and being able to tag team and take breaks and sound ideas off of you, and you create space to for informed choices and to make sure their voices are heard. We do advocate for our clients, but as you said, we don't speak for them, like instead of them.
Yeah. Why don't you explain the difference there? Because, yes, advocacy takes place, but you don't speak directly like this is what this, she wants or they want. Yeah. So I'd love to hear you explain.
Yeah. And that's a complicated issue, because it's hard to understand. Like, many doulas and people in the maternity field have different definitions of what advocacy is.
so true.
So it's hugely important to define it. So for me, advocacy is supporting my client 100% in their choices, letting them know they have choices, and then if they change their mind, supporting them 100%. And when we step into the birthing room, then making sure if they have mentioned, I would like something done in a certain, these are my birth wishes, we talked ahead of time because we have this relationship previous to the birth starting, then if I see things not happening in that way, I will speak up. And usually depends on what's going on. Usually my speaking up is directly to the birthing person or to their partner or whoever. And if they're not quite in a place to listen, I will ask questions of the staff. Mm-hmm. But it's always more like, you know, this is happening. You'd mentioned you wanted this. How are you feeling? Or how are you feeling about this happening? Is that something you would like to do?
Yes.
Do you need more? Do you need time to get your questions answered? Do you want some time to think about it? Just interjecting yourself in the space to sort of create an energy support and shield, you know, hold that space for the clients. Now, if it's something that's the general, I would say, the usual level of advocacy that I do, when there's bigger things happening like obstetric violence, then that requires a different type of participation.
But yes.
I do try to make sure we talk with my clients during prenatal meetings to not just be in a position, not get to that position at that moment, but you know, where it's very dire and rife for trauma, but you know, setting up the steps along the way so that doesn't even happen. And it's different situations, different providers, different places call for different levels of advocacy. But basically, to me, the advocacy is my client comes first, 100% their choices, and I will not take away their power. But if somebody else is trying to take away their power, I will step in and try to lift them up. So that they can take that power back, if that makes sense.
No, and yes, and those are two very different things. And thank you for explaining that. I was just at coffee with a friend and they're talking about their trying to conceive journey and was like, oh, you know, I don't want a doula because I can speak up for what I want and I want to talk to my doctor. And I'm like, no. Like, of course we want that. Like, yes, that's what we want. And, you know, I think a small example is when I was, being admitted, the labor and delivery nurse just handed me the labor gown to put on. And my doula just looked at me and she smiled and said, Jen, didn't you bring your own clothes? And in those situations, I was ripe to just put on the gown because I was being told what to do in the midst of contractions in the hospital in an environment that was very much, you know, I was still not comfortable and I was just getting there and I didn't know. You don't know so often what's happening because you haven't been through it if this is your first time giving birth. But a doula is a trained professional that has been there often 100 times before and can just find those little moments to help you remember, oh no, this is what I want, because like you had said, we've spent time together talking about what I want and what are my options. And so it is just such a, it's a priceless experience. It is unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life. And in fact, it was my mother that helped us to pay for our doula, and she was able to be there for the birth and said, she was 60 years old at the time, and said in all of her life, it was the best money that she had ever spent, because even though she had given birth and she's my mother, she watched my doula do things for me and helped to guide me in a way that her as my mother wouldn't have been able to, and that it was such a gift to be able to give to her daughter. So it is just incredible.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think your story about the gown, because you make a great point that doulas are super comfortable in the hospital usually. Mm-hmm. And they're knowledgeable about birth. So they know your options and they know, like, I'll know in this hospital they do things this way, but in this other hospital they do this way. And even though they're telling you put on the gown, you don't have to. Or even a hep lock, you don't have to have it. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to. There might be different levels of pushback, right?
right.
But having you don't have to do anything you don't want to at any point. And that's where the human right, birth as human rights issue comes up. It's, you still have body autonomy. So the comfort level that we provide, we try to transfer that to you. And just holding that space, and here's a huge part of it. If it's your first baby, you've only seen most likely birth happen in movies or films or stories that people tell you in the street. Yeah. in a street that can be really scary. So we don't tend to approach birth from a physiological point of view, mm-hmm. but we tend to approach it from a medical point of view. And in medicine, there's a hierarchy where people take care of you and you pretty much follow because they're the expert. But the thing is, birth is not a medical event. And because it's not a medical event, the expert doesn't have to be medical. It's great to have everybody in your team there for you. And I appreciate all the advances we have in medicine in case something happens. Yeah. But in general, birth doesn't require things, you know,
the interventions. Yeah.
Yeah. And I always like to make mark a difference between a medical intervention and a physiological intervention. Mm, yeah. And that's where things get really interesting.
Yeah. And I love this conversation, and it's so important. And I've interviewed other doulas, and we've talked more about, you know, advocating for people of size and all the interventions that take place and how can we, do certain things and certain tips and tricks. But I think we also need to be having this more conversation around, you know, that our bodies are really designed to do this. And if we put certain things in place to help put ourselves in the best possible position. Like for me, it was researching hospitals, that the hospital just 2 miles away had a much higher cesarean birth rate versus my county hospital that was far less, you know, hands-on, and just knowing that you have so many more options than we've been conditioned to believe. We're conditioned to believe that, well, I've been going to the same OB for years for my annual checks and I have a comfort level there, so that's just who I have to go to. And realizing that, no, you actually really truly do have so many options. And if at any point you think you want to go into labor and birth one way, and then you change your mind, and let's say that you want a medicated birth, like, a doula is not going to judge you. They're going to be there to support you through that decision-making process as well. And that's so important.
Mm, absolutely. And the fact is, you can have a provider that's really great for your GYN needs that mm-hmm. may not be the right provider for your obstetrical needs. Yes. And that they're two different things. And I get how difficult it is to switch. But if you're feeling any red flags or anything's like, it's you're not feeling that that's the right fit, it's only going to get worse during the birth. Mm-hmm. Believe me. So yeah. It's better to change now than when you're in a so vulnerable physiological state. And I want to talk a little bit more about that. Here's the thing. As I mentioned, birth is not a medical event. It's a physiological event. And so in that sense, doulas are your amazing best support because you yourself are not a medical person either. The doula is not a medical person. We don't do medical things, but we focus exclusively, completely on you and the opportunity to provide the things that support physiology. So if you imagine birth like an iceberg, everything that's above the water is the things that we usually say about birth in terms of medical terms and the dilations and the stages and the centimeters and the due dates and all that, which is great information for the care providers. But your body cares not one bit about any of that. Like your body does not care how far dilated you are or what day it is or, you know, time during labor. It's a construct. Nope. All these constructs go out the window. You're in a different time. You're in labor land. So, but I think it's really important to bring that trust back to physiology and have people focus on what they can do to own their births, because it's not something that that happens to them or others are in charge of. I want people to own their space and their birth and their connection to their baby and the experience they're having, because that's how truly you get physiology to flow. And if you think about, I hear this all the time, we don't really trust our bodies that much.
Yeah.
So why would we trust it during birth? And I feel that even in childbirth education classes, we get this, we're told about the, you know, epidurals and the choices and the what will happen and different things, comfort measures that we can use. But not often enough are we told about what the process is from a physiological point of view and mm-hmm. how we can connect with it to make it flow. And so, for example, we do physiology really well. Our bodies do. Like, you blink, you breathe, you digest.
Yeah, we're breathing right now without thinking that we're breathing, but we're breathing.
Right. And you're not like timing how far between every blink, how far apart your blinks are. Or if you ate at 5, where is your food now that it's 6? And how long did it take to? No, your body just does it.
Yeah.
Right. So birth is similar. However, it is a physiological mind-body connection process. So just like you can keep your eyes open or hold your breath or, you know, travel somewhere and your digestion gets off because your routine, you don't feel as safe, secure and supported. Same thing happens with birth. So when you get the thinking brain activated during birth, instead of letting the primal brain come online, then they're in either or proposition. They don't think at the same time. So if you're thinking, you're not birthing.
Yeah. So
one of my mantras is you birth with your body, not with your brain. And so the trick is how to shut off your thinking brain. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the things that I do with my prenatal clients is switch that up and give them tools to how they can support their physiology during pregnancy, because there's a lot of work you can do ahead of time, and during birth itself, so that labor flows. And if it's flowing, guess what? You're in command and you don't need interventions and nobody's going to tell you what to do. And you're going to experience the fetal ejection reflex. So nobody's going to say, okay, now push your baby, because it's going to be like, baby's coming. Throw on some gloves.
Yeah.
It turns birth upside down when you let the medical people do their medical thing and understand that that's their purview, but that your purview is physiology. And how do you do the things that we're usually told of, like, trust your body, trust your intuition, surrender. What I find unfair is that when that's brought up, say, in childbirth education classes, you're not told how. Mm. Like, who wants to surrender to anything? And
no,
how are you going to trust your body, right?
When I get so into this because I'm like, I experienced this. Like, I went into labor just knowing, okay, I want to have an unmedicated birth because my mom always talked about it. But also, secretly, I was really afraid of people having to move my larger body for me. And me being open to hiring a doula and working with a midwife and then going through labor where I was so in tune with my body, and my body and I danced together in ways in my whole life I had never loved and trusted my body to do what it absolutely could. And I will never forget, and I've shared this before, but when I was on my knees birthing my baby, my doula could tell that I was having this eternal struggle, and she just said, listen to your body. And for a split second, I was like, wait, what? I've never listened to my body. I've never trusted my body. And then something told me, Jen, if you don't let go, we're going to be here a real long time and you need to let go. And in that moment, letting go and allowing my body, my almost 300-pound body that I hated for so long, allowing my body to do what it already knew what to do and how to do it, and birthing my baby in like 30 minutes on my knees, like, it changed everything for me. Like, it happened, you know, like 10 years ago, and I'm tearing up like it happened yesterday, because after that there was no going back. There was no hating my body ever again. There was no not trusting that my body is so strong and so capable at any size. And why had I waited 30 years to learn to trust? And there's something about childbirth, if you can be open to it, that it can change everything for you. So yeah, it's so incredibly powerful.
Mm. It can be such an amazing, even healing experience for so many people.
Yeah.
Regardless of the size that you are, because having a baby is the most transformative event of your life. Like,
yes.
I'm not exaggerating, right? Like, even on a cellular level, every single one of your cells changes during pregnancy, and you start having some of your baby cells in you
forever. You carry them forever.
Or their DNA in your cells. And you know, it's going to transform your identity, like maybe adolescence, but this matrescence is so much more than anything you've experienced. You're going to go from being an I to forever a we. You're going to, you know, forever your mom was your mom, or your dad was your dad, or your parent was your parent. And now that's your title. And like, so it changes everything.
Yeah.
And I always say that the birth experience itself has to be such an immense monumental body event to it's tectonic plate shifting event.
Yes.
Because you need a physical representation of the change that's happening inside you to your identity. And that's, you know, postpartum. But that's why it needs to be just like an enormous storm. That it's powerful. And I think if we, all of us as a culture, stop observing birth, because even as the birthing person, we're observing it. How far are my contractions? Who cares?
Yeah.
Just get into them, because you're not a vessel to be delivered of a baby. You are an active participant. It's not something happening to you. You are leading it. And the more we can support that, and the more you can support that, oh my gosh, like we do these, and it doesn't require a lot of, you have this inside you. It doesn't require a lot to shift it. We do, like, I do two prenatals with my clients, and we talk about physiology. I give them homework on ways to support during pregnancy and practice, because the skills you need, here's the thing, the skills you need for birth are not the skills that we usually apply to our thinking brain logical life.
Yeah.
Because it's not a thinking brain event.
No, so, you have to let go.
Yeah. So it's those skills that we even kind of disdain a little bit, because you need uncertainty, messiness, you know, unorganization, process oriented instead of goals. All the things that we like to do, this is feeling instead of thinking. You got to learn those skills so that you can apply them in birth. Because I find if you try to apply thinking brain, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to move. And that's where I love birth plans. But when it's a laundry list of what you want and what you don't, that's where it gets, when it's a thinking brain birth plan, then that's problematic. Because you're then going to be stuck on the thinking brain and you're not birthing. So I agree. Like, you can do this. Your body's made to do this. Just like it breathes and blinks, like, you already do it. And my clients show up differently. It's a shift where I would say I've switched from being a doula to a bila.
Oh, explain.
Well, because I don't have to be doing so many things.
You're just being present.
Being present for and following their lead. And if they're chatty, we chat. But that as they get deeper into physiology and labor land and things go deep, then they start getting more quiet. And as they get more quiet, I get quiet. Language is a thinking brain process. So if I'm distracting you by asking you questions of how you're feeling, and on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your pain level? Guess what? I'm activating your thinking brain. I'm taking you out of the primal. The primal is where hormonal control happens. It's controlling the oxytocin. It's allowing it to flow. And then you're disturbing the process.
Yeah. I mean, you can birth in all ways. Like, you can fight against every single contraction, and it's just going to be tenfold harder. Or you can learn, like you say, learn in advance, or be supported by a doula, or whatever you need to do in your own coping mechanism. But I'll never forget my doula teaching me how to ride my contractions like waves. And once she taught me, then I just did it. And she just reminded me to breathe. And we danced. Like I said, it was a dance together. But I just rode them like waves. And in the beginning, I was fighting and it hurt. And then once I started to ride the waves, I just let go, and I rode them for hours, and my body roared when it needed to. And it was just such a powerful and empowering experience. But you have to let go. You have to tune in to know that your body is going to do what it does. And I know probably for some people listening, maybe this sounds really woo-woo, and that's okay too. Like, this isn't for everyone, but I think it's so important that we actually talk about this. Actually isn't really woo. Like,
it's
our
not
bodies
woo. It's
are
physiology.
Designed to do this. This is our bodies. We have so stepped away from what birth is, and we've made it a very, you know, birth makes a lot of money. It's one of the best ways hospitals make money. And there are certain things that happen during birth and that don't necessarily need to happen, and interventions that have taken place that are now the norm that are not even evidence-based. So all Adriana and I are talking about is, like, our bodies are designed to do this, and there is another way if you are open to it. And I'm glad that you're listening to this conversation right now.
And I also want to mention that this is not only for unmedicated vaginal births.
Yes.
So, for example, I mean, circumstances happen, right? That's part of the flow. And in your baby is born, when you're giving birth, it's a 50-50 dance that you guys are doing. You might have some things in mind, but your baby might have other things in mind. So in that sense, not, you know, thank goodness we have all the medicine advances that we have for when things are not going. And this isn't to say that you're like, you know what, this is too much for me, or I'm too tired, or it's been too long and I haven't slept for days and I need an epidural. Go for your epidural. Yeah. However, understand that those are interventions, so that if you want your physiology to continue, you need to stay in that birthing space. So one of the things that I do with my clients when they have an epidural is, like, why did you get the epidural? And is it because most of the time it's because they're really exhausted. So first thing to do is sleep. And when you sleep, you go into deeper brain waves, which means you're not thinking. So there, boom, you're supporting physiology. Like, sleep is the best thing you can do during labor. Early labor, sleep. Whenever you can, sleep. Forget about moving, sleep. Your body will do it. And then the other thing is, if they slept or woke up and they're rested, then if you start chatting or picking up your phone and distracting you that way, now you're getting out of the primal birthing brain and into the thinking brain, and you're going to slow down oxytocin flow. Like, epidurals in many cases tends to slow down contractions. And my hypothesis is not that it's the epidural, it's that you are getting yourself out of the birthing hormonal flow. So what we usually have my clients do is, like, well, remember what you're doing. You're here. You're, you know, great that you're not feeling these sensations if it was too strong, but then connect with your contractions, connect with your, and they just touch their belly and they can feel when it's contracting.
Yeah.
Connect with your baby.
Your body.
Like, yeah. Tune in. And then you see it. It just continues. So this isn't to say that it's only for, I support whatever kind of births, and cesarean births, then there's physiology that we have to do, or with that I provide, you know, suggest that we do after baby is born, because a lot of interruptions happen. So how can we try to recreate, and even postpartum, recreate that first, those first moments of your with your baby, of that golden hour? Because it's a connection that's triggering instincts and hormonal knowledge and firing up neurons in your baby. So it's good to have that experience, just because it's an instinctual one.
What is your advice for someone who's listening, but like me in the beginning was like, but I've never liked my body or loved my body or listened to my body or trusted my body? How do you start to begin that process, whether it's in labor or just in life? Like, how do you start to believe that your body is capable of so much that we don't allow ourselves to believe?
And I'd say go with the things that you do know to be true. Even if they're slow, if it's a little mantra of, my body knows how to breathe, my nut body knows how to birth. You know, like, build that trust from something you already know. That doesn't seem like such a big ask, right?
No, that's beautiful.
And then let your body surprise you.
Yes, because it will if you trust it. And that isn't to say that, as you said, birth goes in its own way. And that doesn't mean that if it doesn't go the way that we all, you know, think or imagine it will be, that there's something wrong with your body. And I, you know, when people are like, well, I didn't have a healthy pregnancy, but you know, people of all sizes and backgrounds have many different outcomes. And it doesn't mean that now, well, I didn't have this, so now I can't trust my body ever. Like, I hope people listen that there are many different ways to give birth, and that if we really tune into our bodies, there's this other way. There's another way, and it can totally change everything for you if you're open to it.
It is so exciting because I see it. I see the connections between birthing people and their partners when they're doing it together and they get it, right? Because it's like, early labor, ignore it until you can't ignore it anymore. Like, don't spend energy on timing contractions. So like a 5-1-1 contraction pattern is not going to sneak up on you. It's not.
You'll know.
You'll know. So only time them. And for a little bit, when things get like, oh, this is requiring full attention, maybe we should check in to see what our bodies are doing, just to know. Okay, yeah. It's so much. Maybe we should go. Maybe we should not. But like, that's, especially early labor, if you can ignore it, and then you'll see your body move along and do things, and you won't get to the hospital too early, and you know, things will be flowing. And when you're, the other thing that I do, here are some tips for physiology. Like, I'm trying to be practical here at the end of the show.
Yeah, get it.
The other thing that I love to say is, because your body doesn't care about centimeters and what, it doesn't care, like, it doesn't need a ceremony to note the passing from 10, you know, 9 centimeters to 10 to fully dilated. No. There's no need for that, because being fully dilated is not necessarily mean you need to push just yet. Yeah. Like, learn about physiology. Your baby's head needs to rotate first before you start pushing. Otherwise, you're going to jam your baby's head. So just the door needs to be open. That uterus still continues to contract. And actually, at some point, that lower uterine segment is going to let go of that head. And when that head is free, it rotates really easily. And then you have your baby, there's a reflex on the back of their head. And it's a reflex, so it's instantaneous. And you can, like, it's a great party trick after your baby's born. You touch them, really, you touch them in the back of the head and they extend the head. Because as they're coming back down, the head goes deeper into the pelvis, it rotates, and then the pubic bone hits the back of the head, and the head extends to navigate the curve between the pubic bone and the tailbone.
Like, I'll put this video in the show notes so you can see all that our baby, just think, our baby intuitively knows that they have to do all of these things to fit and come down through the birth canal. Like, it's all, like, intuitive, and it's all, yes, it's all what we've been talking about. Like,
and even more than intuitive, it's magnificently designed physiology.
Physiology, yes.
To make it work, right? They have, and you were asking about how ways to trust your body. So your baby's got that reflex in the back of their head. They'll extend the head. They also have a reflex on the bottom of their feet, so that as they're coming deeper down into the pelvis, at the beginning, they're like curled up like a C, but as they're navigating and extending this head, they become more like an S. Their feet kind of unfurl a bit, and then the uterus pushes on the bottom of their feet, and they push against it to help themselves be pushed out. And for example, when your hormones surge at the very end, you've got, just to give you that second wind for pushing, you've got a surge of adrenaline and a surge of oxytocin, both. But why is that adrenaline there? To give you that that second wind. But then there's in your baby a surge of adrenaline or of oxytocin and a surge of noradrenaline. Why noradrenaline? It helps them deal with oxygen deprivation. Because as that head's coming out, there's more compression. The cord might get compressed. And nature knows that there's going to be a big potential for heart decelerations and oxygen deprivation. So it's got it. It knows it's going to happen, and it created a protective mechanism. Learn about physiology, and that's how you're going to gain trust in the miracle, marvelous, magnificently designed things your body does in this process of pregnancy. It's mind-blowing.
It is. And like, I'm tearing up being brought right back to it. Like, if you allow for it, and there's, like you said, there's so much preparation that goes into it. Like, I talk so much on the show of connecting with a size-friendly care provider, and then a huge champion of doulas wanting to talk to people if they're open to it about the midwifery model of care. And especially, we know for people of size, our risk of having a cesarean birth is frankly astronomical and not right. And a lot of it does have to do, in my frank opinion, in doing this for almost 9 years, with care provider biased against people of size and not believing that our bodies are capable of labor and birth, and just such a high level of interventions. But there are things that you can do to set yourself on a different path, and work that you can do within your body that can truly be, you know, birth, as we said, is the most transformative experience of our lives, but it can also be a traumatic experience. And so all that we can do to help people, you know, have a different outcome and being aware that there are other options. And I love that you've come here and shared so much with us that I hope people are open to, because I've personally experienced it. And like, when I got pregnant, I was like the least woo person ever. Like, I, you know, it's just like, I just don't want people to think that, oh, this is only for crunchy people that, you know, only want natural childbirth. Like, no, it's that, like you said, like, we blink without thinking, we breathe without thinking, like, our bodies are doing this, and it's creating the space to be open to it that can truly change so much, not only for your birth, but for how you tune into your body for the rest of your life. I'm just popping in to say that I've been where you might be today, plus size, pregnant, and discouraged by all the negative information online about what it is like to have a plus size pregnancy. Over the past 7 years, as a certified childbirth educator, I've supported thousands of plus size people during pregnancy, and I've poured all the information I've gained into a guide that will support you. Get the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide today at plussizebirth.com. Be sure to enter coupon code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off your guide. You can also get the audiobook version that I recorded just for you. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Now, let's get back to the show.
You're going to love my last little tip, which is I get passionate and I'm talking and I forget. I was like, I meant to say this earlier, but one of my mantras in terms of like that, getting to 10 and your body not being ready to push, the mantra is can't but poop. Can't but push. So, you know, like when you have to go to the bathroom and you're like uncomfortable and you're like, I could go now, but it might be like, it might take a while and it's not going to be very satisfying. And right, that as opposed to the feeling of like, oh, if I don't get to a bathroom right now.
Yes.
So that feeling of I can't but poop, right, that you get, you want the same during birth. But it's more like I can't but push. So if I have to ask you, do you think it's time to push? It's not. If you have to think about it, thinking brain, if you have to think about it, it's not. So that creates a lot of relief and a lot of trust in your body. I just removed all the stress around like, oh, I have to pay attention to when I need to push and am I going to be able to do it?
Your body knows. Your body will do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say adding to that list of yes, find, you need to feel supported, safe, and loved, right? Mm. Because that's how oxytocin flows. So you need to find a place of birth, a care provider, a team, everything that provides you with that as much as possible within your circumstances for a better experience. And then I would also recommend, make sure you learn about physiology. Take a childbirth education course or a birth preparation course that focuses on physiology. And there's not that many out there.
Tell us about your class.
Yeah, well, as it is.
I mean, perfect segue.
All about physiology,
and you
right?
know I'm a huge champion of you and your work. So please tell us about your class.
So after many years of people asking me if I have, because I have postpartum preparation online classes, and those have been around for a couple of years. But it is now that I've just started a birth prep online class. And they're live webinars because I want to be able to connect more with people while they're doing it, right? Then and adjust for the circumstances. But basically what I'm doing is I'm taking what I do with my birth clients my during our prenatals. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking exactly what I do with them in my prenatals, what we talk about, what I teach them, and I'm putting it online. Plus, but that would be only two prenatals. I'm actually adding a third one to go deeper into, because when I'm one-on-one with a person, I go specifically to their situation. I want to have broader situations. So that requires like another prenatal, because I find there's about five different pivotal moments where birth physiology can derail, like going past your due dates, or all the fear around your due dates is one, disappointing vaginal checks, when you have a crisis of confidence, getting ready to push. Those are all pivotal moments where it can derail. And so we talk specifically about what to do during those times to support physiology so that you're like not activating a thinking brain.
Yeah.
So we're doing three classes, and all of that, all the information for all my classes, the postpartum, the birth prep, they're all at birthfulcourses.com. And people can also just email me, ask me questions about it. I am so approachable. I love connecting with people.
Thank you. Thank you. Tell us all about your podcast too.
Oh, the Birthful Podcast. The Birthful Podcast just turned 5 years old.
Congratulations. I was so honored to be a guest a few years ago.
Oh, and it was such a fun episode. I'm so glad you came on. Yes. And this was before you started your own. It was, I think, like, it was a bit before. So yeah, I interview birth professionals. The first few years, it was only birth professionals, and I would do birth stories during the summer. And for the past, I think, two years now, I've been alternating. So it's a weekly show, and every week, 1 week is a topical show with a guest. So for example, on inductions or cesarean rates or
plus size pregnancy.
Plus size, yes. Thank you.
There you go.
All the things. Big babies, huh? How about that? Shoulder dystocia.
Yeah.
There's my friends joke that, like, for everything, there's a Birthful Podcast for that.
Well, there is.
There's 5 years worth. And then we alternate. So between a topical show and a birth story, because I want people to get an idea of all the types of ways birth can happen and what it can look like. And hear how, what I love is that the messages that I get for the Birthful Podcast, I get the messages of, this is what gets me more fired up every time, is people saying, your podcast, your classes gave me the confidence to believe I could do this. And it shifted how I was thinking about birth. And I had the most amazing experience that I wanted because you made it, like, listening to the show made a difference, which of course I'm like, oh my God, I am not worthy at all. But
yeah. I feel the same way when I get those emails. Yeah.
It can be different. I believe that the more I do this, the more I learn that you can do this.
Yeah.
You just need to, we've led the birthing person astray. And by we, I say culturally and medical system and maternity care, we've gone far astray. Yeah. We just need to get back to it. And that's why it's I don't call it woo because it's not woo. It's physiology. Like, there's so much science behind it.
I just, I can hear some of my listeners pausing. So I'm talking to them when I say that. But yeah, I mean, again, I've experienced the physiology of birth and tuning into it. And it was you can't even put it to words. Like, in one moment, I was even like looking at my family and I was just like in this other state of mind. And I'm like, I'm having a baby. And they were like laughing at me like, yeah, you're having a baby. I was like, no, like, it felt like my body was transitioning of like, you are about to become a mother. Like, the universe was downloading information into my body. Like,
yes.
It was just like, you can't even put it into words. But if you are open to it and if you can create that safe space for it, and it can absolutely be in a hospital, that's where I gave birth. Like, it's just so incredible. And then it sets you up for this bonding with your baby immediately and all these things that can happen. And I just think, like, we have this heart mission of saying, like, there is another way. There is another way between all the standard things these, you know, movies and TV shows show us of what birth is. It's so much different than what we've been led to believe it is.
Absolutely. I love that you mention, because I see this, that you can have a magnificent, flowing, physiological birth in the hospital.
Yeah.
You can have that. It doesn't have to be all interventions. You just have to understand that you're just going to have to shift things a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I was very fortunate to have the nurse who was stoked to be there for an unmedicated birth, and she never left, and the midwife who never left because she was even supposed to leave and was like, no, I need to be here for this person. Like, the stars aligned for my birth, and I will forever be thankful of my doula and my mom and my husband. Like, I was very fortunate. Hospital birth doesn't always look that way at all. But I also switched hospitals, switched care providers. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of work to help put things in place. And, you know, whether it's home birth or birth center birth or wherever it is that you feel safe giving birth, doing the research, becoming educated, tapping into courses beyond just hospital courses are so incredibly important for you to decide whatever it is that you want, that you can set yourself up in the best way that you can. So I love your podcast. And if people have so enjoyed these episodes, I hope that they will not only check out your courses, but subscribe to the Birthful podcast and continue to learn and to download this information that just opens your eyes to so much, not only for pregnancy and birth, but also for healthcare and other options that we have that we aren't always aware of. So I am so incredibly thankful for you and your work. Where can people find you besides birthful.com? Like, where on social media can we hang out?
Oh, yeah. Instagram is a great place. It's at Birthful Podcast. That's where I'm most active. I do have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/birthful. But yeah, Instagram is where it's at. And
it is. Yeah. Where we get to hang out. Again, I adore you. I am so appreciative of the work that you do, and I really hope people will tune in. We'll put everything in the show notes from the courses to Instagram to that video of like all the amazing things that have to happen during birth for our babies as they move. But yeah, just thank you.
And I adore and love the work that you do, and we resonate so much. I like, yes, let's... This is so, thank you for having me on. So good.
Oh, hi. Yes.
I will also send you a link to a video that was made a few years ago, which is one of my favorite videos, made by the Rome chapter of birth, and I can't remember the name. It's called The Performance. And they basically take a couple and go through, like, they're in the hospital, but it's instead of giving birth, they're doing the process of having sex, but it's being treated, you know, with the doctor and a nurse and hydration and everything, like just like birth is treated. Mm-hmm. And it is mind-blowingly good. And it makes sense. It'll be like, oh, yeah, this is why this is what we're doing wrong. I'll send you the link. It's so good.
Oh, well, thank you again so much for your time, your work, and I adore you. So until next time, bye, friends.
Bye.